constant surveillance, and this bill just makes it easier and more certain that all Americans in this country, and particularly if you live within that zone, are going to not be able to walk on the street without fear of being detained. You already have detentions and deportations of U.S. citizens, of law-abiding immigrants without due process. And I think what this bill is doing is it's providing the government with the resources to be able to continue to do that at levels that we have never before seen in this country.
Jean Guidotto, I want to thank you very much for being with us, New York Times contributing opinion writer and author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump and the White Nationalist Agenda, speaking to us from Los Angeles. Coming up, California's Attorney General Rob Bonta. He sued President Trump for deploying the National Guard in L.A. Stay with us.
Señor presidente, le vengo a avisar, no tengo papeles para trabajar. Presidente, pregunto por qué matan al moreno con piel de café. Si fuera presidente, honestamente, si fuera presidente,
President by the East LA-based Las Cafeteras, performing here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we continue to cover the Trump administration sending troops into the streets of Los Angeles, we're joined by California Attorney General Rob Bonta. On Monday, he sued the Trump administration for deploying the National Guard without the consent of California Governor Gavin Newsom. The lawsuit came a day after Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, threatened to arrest Newsom and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass for obstructing immigration enforcement. On Sunday night, Governor Newsom responded to Homan's threat during an interview on MSNBC.
Me, arrest me. Let's just get it over with. Tough guy. You know, I don't give a damn. But I care about my community. I care about this community. The hell are they doing? These guys need to grow up. They need to stop. And we need to push back. And I'm sorry to be so clear, but that kind of bloviating is exhausting. So, Tom, arrest me. Let's go.
On Monday, President Trump told a reporter he would support Homan arresting Newsom. He said, quote, I would do it if I were Tom. Listen carefully.
He's daring Tom Homan to come and arrest him. Should he do it?
I think it's great, said the president. We're joined now by Rob Bonta, the Attorney General of California. Welcome to Democracy Now! If you can start off by explaining your latest lawsuit, what is it, 23 or 24 against President Trump around the National Guard? And then are you planning to sue around his deployment of 700 Marines?
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be with you. We've brought 25 lawsuits in 20 weeks, more than one a week, because that is how blatantly and brazenly, consistently and frequently the president has violated the law. He is a repeat offender when it comes to breaking the law. And yesterday we filed our lawsuit against the Trump administration for their unlawful deployment of the National Guard into Los Angeles. They rely on a law. It's called 10 U.S.C. 12406. Which requires a rebellion, which there is not, a invasion, which there is not, or the inability for the federal government to execute the laws with the, quote, regular forces, which doesn't exist either. So none of the required elements of the law are there to trigger the use of the authority to deploy the National Guard. And the law also requires that the president issue the order to bring in the National Guard through the president or through the governor, excuse me, meaning the governor has to consent to it, and Governor Newsom has strenuously objected to the National Guard coming in. So we believe on the plain and unambiguous language of the law, there's no authority to call in the California National Guard. The California National Guard is a joint operation. The commander-in-chief is the governor of California in most times. But the president, if there is a clear statutory authority, can call them in. There is no clear statutory authority here. So we're asking the court to declare invalid the president's order to call in the National Guard and to order them unlawfully present.
And Attorney General...
And the Marines.
Attorney General...
We're also looking closely at the Marines.
At a news conference on Monday, when ahead of filing the lawsuit, you accused Trump of, quote, trying to manufacture chaos and crisis on the ground for his own political ends. What do you think Trump's aim is here?
He wants conflict. He wants chaos. He wants confusion. We, on the other hand, in California, we want peace. We want calm. We have the largest sheriff's department in the nation, in the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, the third largest police department in the nation, in the L.A. Police Department. They are very well-resourced, highly trained men and women, fully capable of addressing any issues that are attendant to the mostly peaceful protests. They have, fully within their resources, the ability to address all challenges when it comes to public safety. The president, by bringing in first, authorizing 2,000 National Guard members, and then another 2,000, and then 700 Marines, he is unnecessarily and counterproductively escalating. He's inflaming tensions. He's provoking a situation. Unfortunately, I think he wants conflict. He wants something to erupt. So that provides the basis for him to try to grasp and seize additional power. His through line and his modus operandi is to just seek more power. That's why he calls everything that's not an emergency. He calls things that aren't an invasion. He uses that language very specifically because those are the triggers to give him more authority. But he can't change the facts on the ground just by lying about that factual scenario. And unfortunately, we think chaos and confusion is the end goal. And that's why we're urging everyone to be peaceful, lawful, safe in their protests and exercises of their First Amendment rights.
And you've also said that the January 6, 2020 events in Washington were far closer to meeting the definition of a, quote, rebellion under the section of law that Trump is evoking. Yet, obviously, he defended many of the protesters back of January 6th. Your response to the double standard here?
Absolutely consistent with President Trump's ongoing hypocrisy. He says, for example, he's going to go after undocumented violent criminals, and he goes after two-year-old children and people lawfully present and refugees seeking safety when they have persecution and violence at home. And to call what's happening in Los Angeles a invasion or a rebellion just defies credulity, and especially when there was something closer to a rebellion, a armed attempt to overthrow the leadership of the United States and place in power a president who wasn't duly elected and displace someone who was duly elected. But he stood by was not involved in that situation, though he tries to insert himself into what's happening in California when it's fully under control with the local law enforcement. So his through line is to seize as much power as possible, lie about the facts on the ground to justify those seizure attempts, and is often, as you've just recognized, hypocritical.
Attorney General, will you investigate whether the FBI has provocateurs provoking violence in L.A.?
You know, we're interested in evidence, in facts. If there is information shared with us that leads us to believe there is unlawful conduct, we'll go where the facts go and where the law takes us. Right now, my understanding about what's happening on the ground in Los Angeles is there are mostly peaceful protesters exercising their time-honored and constitutionally supported rights to freedom of expression, freedom of association, and freedom of speech. Unfortunately, and I've seen this time and time again, when you have peaceful protests, there are often those who use those protests as a cloak for their participation in unlawful activities and chaotic activities. They have nothing to do with the underlying subject matter that's being protested, but they use the opportunity to create some chaos and some division. Those folks need to be held accountable, arrested, prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That is not what we need right now, and that is not consistent with First Amendment rights and uplifting our democracy.
Also, have you heard or been in communication with attorneys generals in other other parts of the country? Are they actively preparing for an event like this to happen in their state as well?
I'm proud to say that the Democratic attorneys general talked consistently, regularly. We prepared for months before the presidential election. We've been talking every week and often every day in preparation for the unlawful actions and undemocratic actions and unconstitutional actions that define this presidency. We spoke yesterday at length. They were very supportive. Many reached out to me over the weekend as the events unfolded in Los Angeles. And for that, I'm grateful for the camaraderie, for the collaboration, for the teamwork. And yes, the Democratic attorneys general are very well aware of what the executive order says. It is not specific to Los Angeles, nor is it specific to California. It applies potentially nationwide, including in any one of their states. That's why the Democratic governors spoke out against this unprecedented and unnecessary and counterproductive step taken by the Trump administration to deploy National Guard. And it's also why Democratic attorneys general are on high alert for what happens next. Los Angeles and California may be the first place, but unfortunately may not be the last place where this unlawful action by the president takes place.
Rob Bonta, can you explain what Los Angeles being a sanctuary city and California being a sanctuary state means? But first, one protest leader suggested the other day that Governor Newsom can order the National Guard to stand down. Is that true?
Let me answer the second question first. The governor is the commander-in-chief of the California National Guard, and unless or until there's a specifically triggered statute that authorizes the president to call in the National Guard, and that is rare and infrequent and has not occurred here, then the governor is the commander-in-chief, but the president can be involved when there's clear statutory authority. Right now, the president has called in the National Guard. The National Guard, guards people themselves, they should have clear directions, clear orders, and a clear mission. That's why we're going to court to make it clear, that the president's orders are invalid and unlawful, and then they would come back under the leadership and command of Governor Newsom. But it needs to be clear, in our view, through the court, not some wrestling match between the governor and the president where the National Guard's people are left confused. We go through the normal process, the appropriate process, which is the courts, to declare invalid the president's actions. Los Angeles and California, to your first question, are pro-public safety jurisdictions. We want to use our public safety resources, our law enforcement resources, on tackling criminal laws, enforcing criminal laws, on investigating, arresting, and prosecuting criminals, people who rob, people who murder, people who rape. And we will leave the immigration, the civil immigration enforcement, it's not criminal, the civil immigration enforcement, to the agencies and departments in the federal government who work on that. We think by deploying our resources to enhance public safety, we have a safer community. By not being directly involved, in most cases, with some exceptions in the statute, in civil immigration enforcement, more victims will come forward to report crime. More witnesses will come forward to cooperate with law enforcement. It makes our communities safer. That is our choice. It is fully consistent with our constitutional rights under the 10th Amendment to use our not unlimited and often scarce law enforcement resources to enhance public safety and to leave civil immigration enforcement to the federal government. The federal government can do their job. If they do it lawfully, we will not obstruct, we will not interfere. But they cannot conscript, commandeer, draft into service, force local law enforcement to do their job for them. They must do their job while we decide, while we have decided to focus on enhancing public safety through enforcement of criminal laws, not civil immigration enforcement.
Rob Bonta, we want to thank you for being with us, Attorney General of California, speaking to us from Los Angeles. Next up, an update on Kilmer Abrego Garcia. He's back in the United States, but the federal authorities have jailed him in Tennessee, then on to the Gaza flotilla. Stay with us.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. One day.
Performing We Shall Overcome, accompanied by Alexander Rowatin on cello here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now for an update on Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father who was wrongfully sent to a maximum security mega prison in El Salvador in March, now facing federal charges in Tennessee after being returned to the U.S. last week. A two-count indictment unsealed Friday in Nashville alleges Abrego Garcia was illegally transporting undocumented immigrants within the United States. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced the charges, an unusual move. She also described allegations against Abrego Garcia that were not in the indictment and seemed flustered when questioned about this by Wall Street Journal reporter Sadie Gurman.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but you were mentioning, you know, that he had some involvement in these, in a murder, you know, or was connected to groups that had, you know, involved with this other smuggling ring. But to be clear, the only charges he's facing right now are the, like, you know, human smuggling charges. Just that's the one offense. But the other things that you have talked about are not actually in the indictment.
No, co-conspirators allege that. And we were clear to say that he is charged with, it's not only very serious charges of alien smuggling. And again, there were children involved in that. You know, human trafficking, not only in our country, but in our world, is very, very real.
A hearing set for Friday will determine whether Kilmer Abrego Garcia will remain in custody. For more, we're joined by Chris Newman, a lawyer for Kilmer's family and legal director of the National Day Laborer Organizing Network based in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for being with us. Start off by talking about his case. As I listened to one of his lawyers speaking the other day, he said he learned that Kilmer was in the United States from the media, the way the rest of people learned.
That's correct. We all did. We are obviously relieved that he is now back in the United States, a little bit closer in proximity to his wife and family. That's certainly much better than being in functionally a black site in El Salvador. But he's still a far away from what we want, which is for him to be freed and returned to his family.
And has his wife or his mother been able to see him now that he's back in the United States?
They've been able to speak to him for the first time. And remember, we didn't even know if he was alive after April 17th. The last time that we had heard from him was through Senator Von Holland when he and I went to El Salvador, and we were able to, briefly get proof of life and make sure that his health was okay. He wasn't aware of all the allegations that were being hurled at him by the President of the United States, by all of the legal accusations against him. And then after that, we had no contact. No one had contact with him. But thankfully, Jennifer is now able to at least talk to him by phone, and hopefully we'll be able to see him soon.
And can you talk about the significance of these federal charges in Tennessee that have been unsealed?
Well, they have to be treated with the highest amount of suspicion, given the unprecedented amount of defamation and disinformation that has been directed at Kilmer and his family. You know, I went to law school 20 years ago. I studied history. Never have I ever heard of or am aware of a case where the president of the United States has been as invested in the criminal prosecution of an individual person. I think it's astonishing. I think we're going to have to fight very, very hard to make sure that he gets a fair trial, given the extent to which the court of public opinion has been, for example, tainted by all of the really, truly awful things that have been said by the president and his cronies.
Chris Newman, you're also the legal director of Endelon, the National Day Labor Organizing Network in Los Angeles. And I'm wondering if you could make a connection between, I mean, we're seeing the protests, but we see much less of immigrants being arrested and hauled away, or how many across this country are now being jailed from Los Angeles to Dallas, from Phoenix to Chicago. If you can make a connection between what happened to Kilmer and what's happening on the streets right now of L.A., and particularly talk about the focus, as Kilmer was, on day laborers, even unions coming out to support Kilmer and going down, union leaders, to see him, try to be able to visit him in the Salvadoran prison before he was moved back here.
Gosh, I'm so happy that you asked me that question, Amy, because the story for Kilmer began when he was seeking work at a Home Depot near his home. He was falsely accused of being a gang member by a corrupt local police who subsequently was fired and himself pled guilty for misuse of confidential informant information. I'm so grateful to Greg Sargent from the New Republic for unearthing that story. It hasn't been discussed enough. When he was taken into custody after those false charges of him being a gang member or violent or et cetera, they said, oopsie. We made a mistake, but they handed him over to ICE. Now, at this point, it's important to understand, had there been a sanctuary policy in place of the kind that we have in California, Kilmer never would have been transferred to ICE in the first place. He then functionally won his immigration case, won withholding of removal, got work authorization, joined a union, was bettering his life when he was then picked up in this alien enemy's sweep and stunt. The attorney, by the way, who admitted mistake in federal court, Erez, is somebody I know because he was opposing counsel challenging our sanctuary policies in Los Angeles. This guy is a believer. He was a Trump guy, and he admitted mistake. And then, of course, President Bukele then says oopsie when he is outside of U.S. airspace. And I think the nexus to your point, Amy, is the following. You know, I've been down to El Salvador three times in the last month trying to liberate Kilmer. But what people in El Salvador say is that, number one, there are tens of thousands of people in El Salvador in similar situations as Kilmer. No one knows where they are, if they're alive, what they're being charged for, why they're being put in CICOT or other prisons. But number two, what they said to every single congressman is, you in the United States need to act fast because El Salvador is in essence the ghost of Christmas future for what's to come in the United States. In El Salvador, Bukele has become authoritarian. He's become a fascist. He's removed all the guardrails. And everyone in El Salvador said, you all need to work now to preserve the rule of law and the guardrails, because we can see that Trump is, in essence, importing the political technology of President Bukele in El Salvador. And what we see in Los Angeles is people trying to protect the innocent the best way that they know how, by going out into the streets. And yes, it's messy. I'm so grateful that you asked that question of Attorney General Bonta. I really do hope that he investigates the role of Kash Patel and other, you know, I mean, it's hard to even say it, but like Dan Bongino, who's, I don't know, the number two in command in the FBI. I think it's very important that we investigate the role of whether or not there are federal agents as provocateurs, because on Fox News, Sean Hannity says that it's the protesters, immigrants, anarchists throwing bottles. It is equally as likely that there are federal agents that are themselves trying to stoke violence. I've seen it before. You know, I was counsel on the case challenging SB 1070 and challenging Joe Arpaio. That was a common practice that they would put undercover plainclothes people to disguise themselves among protesters in order to provoke violence, to then deter protest. Because again, the other message is if these protests are perceived to be unsafe, then people are deterred from going out and expressing their First Amendment rights. But, you know, I'm confident in Los Angeles, we're not going to fall for that. The immigrant rights, the civil rights community, we are going to show the best of Los Angeles, the beauty of Los Angeles. And hopefully Attorney General Bonta does his part as well by investigating the role of the Trump administration in provoking violence.
Chris Newman, want to thank you for being with us, legal director of Endelon, the National Day Labor Organizing Network based in Los Angeles, and lawyer for Kilmer Abrego Garcia's family. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We end today's show with an update on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. Israel's formally placed 8 of the 12 international activists on the flotilla under arrest after they refused to sign a voluntary deportation order, including Rima Hassan, French-Palestinian member of the European Parliament. Israel's already deported 4 other Freedom Flotilla passengers, including Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, who's just arrived in Paris. The flotilla was challenging the Israeli siege on Gaza. The march to Gaza to the Rafah border crossing in Egypt is about to start this week, demanding a total end to the Gaza siege. For more, we go to Dubai, where we're joined by Hala Rerit, who's preparing to join that global march to Gaza. She's an 18-year career diplomat who resigned from the State Department over the Biden administration's Gaza policy. Hello, welcome back to Democracy Now! In this last minutes that we have, and you, if you can talk about that leap from being a top-level State Department official to now marching from Cairo to the Rafah border and what you're hoping to achieve.
Amy, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be back with you. Well, fundamentally, justice anywhere is a threat to all of us, whether it's in Los Angeles or El Salvador, where we've just heard your segments and bless your show for covering these issues, or in Gaza. Silence does not protect us. Silence does not ensure that we will be okay. It's quite the opposite. Silence ensures the injustice spreads. I dedicated my entire adult life to diplomacy because I'm fundamentally a peacemaker. But unfortunately, I saw after 20 years, almost 20 years of service, that there is some institutionalized corruption within our government that profits from war at all costs, that profits from genocide. And at this point, when we're seeing starvation, absolute starvation of civilians in Gaza while they are simultaneously being bombarded, words are no longer enough. I've been on your show. I've done interviews with you. I've done interviews on dozens, if not hundreds, of networks across the world. At this point, we need action. That's why I'm joining over 3,000 other human beings that want to help their fellow human beings from over 50 countries. We're going to arrive to Cairo on Thursday, and then go to Al Arish the next day, and then walk from Al Arish to Rafah in a show of human solidarity, because we cannot live in a world where we as human beings accept other human beings being forcibly starved.
Hala Rerit, we have to leave it there, but we'd like to ask you to stay so we can do a post-show and post it online at democracynow.org. Hala Rerit is participating in the Gaza walk from Cairo to Rafah. She's an 18-year career diplomat who resigned from the State Department over the Biden administration's Gaza policy. She was the Arabic language spokesperson for the State Department. That does it for our show. We have 3 job openings. Check them out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Hey, I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
Come join us for Slumber Party, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.
You'll hear female artists, oversharing, and research on health, psychology, and identity.
Hope to see you there.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.